This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
From hockey to wrestling, football to golf, no sport left unturned. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Riggevine. Joining me as usual, my co-host, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz. How are you?
Good, Wally. How are you?
Good. Snowing up in Nobleton this morning, Naz?
Sure is.
I guess it's snowing. If you haven't looked outside yet, we got a nice white blanket all over the place. I don't
How would
know,
you like to be in Hamilton for the Alouettes and Ticats today?
At the risk of getting criticized for this, I think in the world of instantaneous news and online stuff and everything's a weather alert, everything's a weather warning, I don't think this, what I'm looking outside today, I don't think would have been considered a big deal in the, for lack of a better term, the old days. Naz, this is good old-time Canadian football today. A little bit of snow, and that's what Canadian football is all about at this time of year, isn't it, Naz?
Absolutely, absolutely. It's going to be great to watch.
Yeah. Yeah, I checked the weather forecast. I don't see any warm weather the rest of the week, so I'm not so sure this is going to melt all that quick. So I guess after the show, I got to head out with a shovel and I got to shovel this stuff away. Talking about CFL football, Naz, today is November 28th. Something important happened 50 years ago today, Naz. I'm sure you recall. Wasn't
Argos in Calgary, Grey Cup.
Yeah, your recollections of that particular day.
Oh, it was a very poor conditions for sure, Wally. It was a low-scoring game. They won 14-11 Calgary. And who can forget Leon McQuay dropping the ball at the 3-yard line?
Leon X-Ray McQuay. We're going to go down memory lane today, the back end of the show. We're going to bring on two important members of that 1971 Argos team, legends and CFL legends in many ways. Peter Martin, who was a linebacker at the time, number 77, University of Western Ontario grad, broadcast Toronto Argo games for quite a bit of time in the 90s and into the 2000s. Did some color work on the Toronto Argo games and also a good friend of the show, Joe the Throw Theismann, who interestingly enough was number 77 on that team. So we got 777 on the show. Is that lucky at the casino, Naz? 3 sevens?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so we're lucky today.
7 and 77.
Yeah, so Peter Martin and Joe Theismann, we're going to talk about what is considered one of the most fascinating teams in Toronto sports history. If you were around in those days, they were a cast of characters led by Leo the Lip Cahill, an incredible group of guys. And why don't we leave it at that? We've got Peter Martin and Joe Theismann. Today is 50 years ago today. Hard to believe, Naz, where'd the 50 years go? But it was November 28th, 1971, one of the most heartbreaking moments in Toronto sports history. Leon McQuay, God rest his soul, unfortunately passed away way much too young at the age of 45. And interestingly enough, one of the other GOATs from that game, Harry Aboffs,
kicked the football out of bounds, eh?
Yeah, and when Argo still had a chance to run it back up the field, there was still time. And God rest his soul as well. Also passed away much too young. But we'll talk about the good parts of that team, the positive parts of that team. So many great, great players. Tricky Dick Thornton, and I always say, Naz, nicknames. It's all about the nicknames. Look at the nicknames some of these guys had. Tricky Dick Thornton, Joe the Throw Theismann, Dave the Knife Ramey, The Wagon, Mel Prophet. He was the California hippie. X-Ray McQuay. So many colorful characters. We'll get a chance to talk about that after the first break. You know, Leafs are on a roll, and we're going to get the ultimate Leafs fan, Mike Wilson, who's doing a great podcast still with Rick Vibe. We'll catch up with him, and Leafs have been on a roll lately, and why not talk about the Leafs? So, Naz, in the few minutes, we have to go to break. College football playoffs. We're getting down to the short
What
stroke.
A game last night. Holy Alabama.
You're talking about the Alabama game. You know, it does. One thing I noticed, and they call it the Iron Bowl. One thing I've noticed over the years in the Iron Bowl, Alabama always goes into the Iron Bowl most of the time. There have been the odd time where Auburn, you know, national championship back, I think Cam Newton was there, was he? Or maybe mistaking him with somebody else.
No, about Cam Newton was there, yeah.
Yeah, and about 10 years ago, he won a national championship that year, and there's the odd time. But Alabama's usually the overwhelming favorite. But, you know, this Auburn team always finds a way against Alabama. Didn't win yesterday. I'll be honest with you, Naz. I know you're a big Roll Tide guy. I just thought Auburn threw the game away in the last couple of minutes. But all credit to Alabama and to Saban and to Bryce Young. And, you know, they did what they had to do to win the game in four overtimes. But that's a game that I wouldn't say that Alabama got lucky, but very easily should have gone the other way.
Absolutely should have gone the other way. Auburn deserved to win that game. For
yeah,
sure. No,
and that raises the big one this coming weekend.
Georgia and Alabama.
Is that in Atlanta, Naz, at Mercedes-Benz Stadium?
I believe so.
And then, you know, Alabama this year, I guess for the first time in a long time, isn't going into that game as the favorite because Georgia's been stomping teams. They are clearly, up until this point in time, the best team in the country. They're number one. They're undefeated. They've been pummeling teams. But one thing I've learned, you got Nick Saban behind the bench over there. Never count Alabama. They'll be significant underdogs, but never count Alabama out, Naz.
No, never count them out for sure. Georgia's defense is incredible, though, Wally.
Yeah, but you know, it's college football. Anything can happen. And I'm a big Irish guy. They won yesterday 11-1. They need some things to happen to make the college football playoff. It's not within their destiny, but you know, if Alabama loses against Georgia, that may be a tough one keeping Alabama into the college football playoff. Cincinnati will probably, I would guess, go through. And right now, Oklahoma State is rated one place behind Notre Dame. But if they beat Baylor in the Big 12 championship next Saturday, they will likely overtake Notre Dame and slot into that fourth spot. Big win by Michigan yesterday over Ohio State. Michigan dominated both ends of the line, both sides of the line against a very good Ohio State team. Over 300 yards in rushing. Bit of a surprise, but it's been a long time coming, Naz.
So a couple of new teams maybe go in this time around. I don't think Alabama is going to beat Georgia. Georgia's too strong.
Yeah, that would be a tough one. But like I said, Naz, never count the Tide out. Never count them out. Anything can happen in one game, and you know, it may come down to last series or a last drive. I wouldn't be surprised. Michigan, they've got to win the Big Ten championship. If they do next week, they're in for sure. If they lose, there's an outside chance. Cincinnati, if they win their last game, they will be undefeated. They're not one of the, they don't play in one of the top conferences in the nation. But how do you keep an undefeated team out, especially they beat Notre Dame at Notre Dame? So that'd be tough. And then I see it as a scramble for the number four spot, probably between Notre Dame, Oklahoma State, and you know, I don't know who else you'd throw into that mix. Alabama, if they do a close game against Georgia, but we'll see what happens. Always interested in college football. Really quickly, Naz, a minute before we go to break. The Bills, big win against the Saints, but the Bills have had a topsy-turvy season. They can't seem to establish. And when they win, they're impressive, and when they lose, you know, the game against Jacksonville, I think, may come back to haunt them, because the Patriots are, we got two games against the Patriots coming up, Naz, and those are probably going to settle who's going to finish first place in this division.
I thought we got rid of those guys when Brady left the conference.
Well, you know, it's the Alabama guy and that's turned it around, Naz, Mac Jones, and, you know, Belichick. You know, he's got that system, and he knows how to put players in positions to succeed, and he certainly put Mac Jones in a position to succeed. Bills are going to have a handful with the Patriots, Naz.
New England's a tough team. Buffalo still should come out on top, but New England's going to be very tough. Very tough.
The Bills, and, you know, the drive for number one seed, I've said, and we'll go to break real short, the drive for the number one seed is always important. You know, how many times does a Super Bowl, if you want to play in the Super Bowl, you want to have the AFC or NFC championship, and you want that home field advantage. Bills, right now, they sort of have to, you know, they're going to be battling that with the Patriots. They're going to be battling with the Tennessee Titans. There's a whole bunch of teams in there, like, with 3-4 losses. It's going to be a scramble. There's no margin for error for the Bills. They gave away a couple of games they could have easily won. So if the Bills are going to, if they're going to drive to that number one seed in the AFC, they literally have to run the table, Ness.
Yeah, they do. Tennessee's injured now, but Kansas City's come back. They come back. I thought they were done. But the Chiefs are there too, 7-4.
Yeah, they certainly are.
A lot of teams can challenge.
Anyways, on that note, let's go to break. When we come back from the break, we'll talk some little hockey talk, some Leafs talk, and who better than the ultimate Leafs fan, Mike Wilson. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville declared, "We'll never be the fastest! We'll never be the cheapest! We'll never be the snazziest dressed!"
What?
Yeah, my point is, we want to be the best! At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza. Stone-baked, the traditional Italian way.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
You won't remember that Real Space Media was once Real Tours Media. What you'll never forget is how they helped you, the real estate agent, sell homes. Or you, the business owner, show off your four walls. Real Space Media has made a name for itself, creating virtual tours and walkthrough floor plans using 3D technology that's light years ahead. In the age of COVID, what better way to see a space safely than through the digital lens of, what were they called again? RealSpaceMedia.ca. Got a space to showcase? Check out Real Space.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity in Vaughan. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
Here's to every boy who thought his Bobby Orr rookie card sounded great in the spokes of his bicycle. His only served to make yours in mint condition more valuable. And now it's payday. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise wants to buy your vintage collection of hockey, baseball, basketball, football, and soccer heroes. Now's the time to cash in while the hobby reaches new heights. If you got them, we need them. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise. Visit our store online at mintink.ca.
You name it, they'll argue about it. No sport left unturned. The boys are back, the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We're on AM 740, 96.7 FM Toronto. Also live streaming on the internet, www.zoomerradio.ca. We're pleased to welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour a good friend of the show, the ultimate Leafs fan. Of course, I'm talking about Mike Wilson. Good morning, Mike. How are you this morning?
Good morning, guys. How you guys doing?
We're doing great. Thanks so much. Bring our listeners up to date. You're still doing the podcast with Rick Vibe. Remind us how our listeners can get a hold of you on the internet.
Well, we're on all the usual podcast networks. We have our own YouTube channel, Squid and Ultimate Leafs Fan. That's his nickname, obviously. You can find us on Podbean. or anywhere else where you can, or just look us up on my website, ultimateleafsfan.com, and you can find us. We've had some fantastic guests. This week's guest is Ethan Morrill, and if you've never listened to him, he is actually one character, I'll tell you, and it's definitely worth a listen.
Certainly is. Mike, before we even get to Leafs talk, it's your recollections. Today's 50 years, November 28th, 1971.
Oh, I live the pain very well, Wally. I can still feel it. I remember sitting watching that, and I remember when Dick Thornton made that interception, I go, here we go. And then all of a sudden, it was a horror about 5 minutes later. So we all feel it.
Yeah, it's interesting. We're going to get a chance to talk to Pete Martin and Joe Theismann right after you. So we're certainly going to relive it a bit this morning.
Yep.
Mike, Toronto Maple Leafs. Last time we were on, you were on our show. Things were looking pretty bleak, if I recall correctly. And you're usually a voice of reason in a lot of these things. Let's not get overexcited based on 6 or 7 games into a season. And I think after that interview that we did with you, I think it was right after the Pittsburgh game where they got pounded 7-1. Leafs have been on a roll. Probably the best team in the NHL over the course of the last month and a half. Leafs Nation's excited again. Mike, what's going on? What happened?
Well, I there's a whole bunch of things. One, I think the players calmed down. I think the fact is, if you look at earlier in the week, one of the concerns was that they were not getting any secondary scoring. And I think the big turnaround has been obviously to getting very good goaltending. The defense at times bends, but it doesn't break. So I've been quite surprised and actually quite impressed with the play of Lilligren and Sandin, who've stepped up, and they're rotating the 7 defensemen. Dermott's going to get back in the lineup again tonight. And what I'm finding more is that the players, the forwards are coming back and being more responsible on their own end. And if you just look at the goal differential earlier in the week, it was just +6, which could be of some concern, but it shouldn't be. And you see over the last 2 games now, all of a sudden it's wide note with the outburst of scoring. So the good news is that, you know, there's still lots more for this team to give on the offensive side. The other thing I think that they turned around is they weren't chasing the game as much as they were in those early parts of the season when things weren't going well. Because as we've talked about before, this team is under scrutiny. They've never ever felt in the 5 years a lot of these kids have been here. Whereas they're going to be judged what happens April the 1st or on, not what happens during the regular season. And I think that really weighed on them after the offseason they had and what they were listening to. So once they got their feet in the ground, and you got to give credit to management that stuck with these guys, they kept with the game plan. They put guys in positions to succeed. And, you know, there is a couple of holes in the lineup that they could improve on. They've got some great depth with the Marlies, and you're seeing some kids down there that are pushing these guys. Alex Beebe has been off to a great start. Josh Hosang, although he was hurt the other night, these kids are going to get a shot at some point to play. So with that type of depth, it's keeping everybody on their toes. And, you know, it's still a long way to go, but you have to be encouraged by what you're seeing.
Nance?
Mike, give me a scouting report on Joseph Woll as a Marley. He looks really good in net Toronto.
Well, the thing about it is, you know, Squid and I talked about this on our show a number of times. You've got to see what you've had. This kid, they've had him for a few years now. He's been in and out of the lineup with the Marlies. Ian Scott, the same thing. Michael Hutchinson, you know what you have there. But you got to see what you have, because at some point, unfortunately for the Leafs, because they're top-heavy with the salary cap, you have to go to the low-end paying players. They have to produce for you. And that's how teams win. You saw it with Tampa last year with that third line of theirs. Now, those guys all got rewarded this year. But no exception as far as goaltending also. And we're seeing that with Joseph Woll. So it's nice to see that he's after a great start, 3 wins in a row. He looks solid. The team's playing well in front of him. They have confidence. You can see the way they handle the puck in front of them. So all those type of things are very positive signs. But I love the fact they've got to let this kid play and see what they have.
Yeah, interesting. Leafs have become a good road. Let's forget about that game in Pittsburgh. Leafs, you know, they've been playing well on the road. They play a tighter game. Their core, you know, as Harry Neal says all the time, your best players have to be your best players. But I'll add to that algorithm, which is, you know, your bottom six have to chip in at key times and have to be opportunistic. The Leafs core, to me, so far this year has been good, but not great. And I think that's a good thing I've noticed with Tavares and with Matthews, it's not just about offense with these guys anymore. They, you know, Matthews and Tavares are playing good two-way game, solid in their own zone, coming back. And I find the Leafs are developing into a good road team. Is that your sense, Mike?
Well, listen, you know what happens when it comes to playoff time. Good defense beats good offense all the time, and it comes down to really tight games. And the Leafs, as I said earlier, what I like the fact is they're winning these tight games, and that's what you have to have. And the leadership coming from Tavares and Matthews, look, the goals are going to come. These guys are too good of players not to score. And same with Mitch Marner, just saw finally he broke out. It's they're being more responsible on their own end, and even in the neutral zone, you can see the Leafs are not clogging it up, playing like a trap. But what they're doing is being more aware of that other player coming into their own end, and that is starting right with the captain. 34 is doing it, and you're seeing it, and then it's filtering right down throughout the whole lineup. So I'm not concerned about the scoring because it'll come because they're too good. But I'd rather listen. You watch the way they're winning these games now. That's how you want to be winning come late March and then moving into early April if you're playing in the playoffs.
Naz?
Another big test Wednesday night. Naz and Kadri and the Colorado Avalanche come into Toronto.
Yeah.
What a game that's going to be, Mike.
Yeah, it should be interesting. I mean, probably, he's been on a roll. He had 25 points last I checked, and he's up there in the scoring. And he's also, don't forget, playing for a ticket at the end of the year, like Morgan Rielly, who was before. He just got extended a couple weeks ago, so... he's motivated to play well, and he's going to be even more motivated coming to Toronto. So it should be a pretty good game, I'm sure. But let's get this one out of the way tonight because this club here has been playing very well also. And this is going to be the biggest test of the road trip so far.
We're talking to Mike Wilson, the ultimate Leafs fan. Mike, the concern with the Leafs team is always the goaltending and more so probably the defense. So far, the goaltending has been exceptional. Jack Campbell has probably the best stats in the league. His winning percentage, his save percentage, let's just, for lack of a better term, call them world class. He's playing as good in net right now as anybody is playing in the league. That's a plus, a huge plus. But you need a backup goalie. You need somebody who can come in and get you 25 games, but you can't afford in today's NHL to give those games away. Mrazek was supposed to be the guy. All guys come in. First of all, I'd like you to address your thoughts on the goaltending, and the concern has always been the defense. Your impressions of the defense so far this year?
Well, I as I said, they at times bend, but they don't break, and that's a good thing. The concern you have on defense is the depth. They are rotating seven players in and out of the lineup, which is a good thing, but any injury, and you reduce that to six, there could be some concern. And you have to be concerned about some of the older guys like Muzzin, who has a tendency to get banged up the way he plays. So fingers are crossed right now, but as things sit today, you have to be impressed by the defense plays. And, you know, they could be a move away from strengthening it at some point, and that is the talk I've been hearing, is that there is something that could be brewing down the road to help them up in the back end. As far as the goaltending goes, yeah, Jack Campbell's probably put himself in line to be the Olympic goalie for the U.S. or one of the goalies in mind for that role. But you're one shot away from him coming in a lineup like Yarbrough with any player in each shift they're leaving. So you have to have the depth, and that's what I said before with Wohl. You got to let this kid play and see what you have. And so far, so good with the three wins. Mrazek, they thought he'd be the guy. He did have a history with some injuries. And the reliability of him, you have to question it. So you've got to look further down the lineup and hope that Wohl can continue on this role. But the key thing is that the players understand what's at stake. They get it. They know the pressure they're under. They know what the expectations are. And you can see the way they're playing, especially behind their own blue line. The play there has really impressed me. So the defense is only as good as the forwards coming back to help. And so far, the forwards are doing that, and it's made the defensive job a little bit better. Watch their outlet pass from a lot of the Leaf defensemen. It used to be Riley that could do that. Now all the defensemen are making that play, and that's what you have to have. And that exit zone pass has been very impressive this year, and they're moving the puck really well. And they're not doing that stretch pass where they have a guy standing blue line anymore on the other end of the ice. They're actually moving the puck quickly in their own end, and the exit play, as you see, has been exceptional so far for Toronto from their aspect and from their luck. So I'm very impressed with that. So the defense is playing well because they're getting big help from the forwards.
Naz, last quick question for Mike, and then we'll let Mike go.
Your assessment of Mr. Zero, Nick Ritchie.
Well, the problem is listen, they signed this kid for a reason. 15 goals, 36 points with Boston last year. He played with Krejci. They brought him in here. He's a big body, 6'2", 6'3", he's 225 pounds. They thought he could play in the big line with Matthews and Marner. He struggled. I think maybe the expectations weighing on him. He was the biggest signing in the offseason as far as the forwards go at $2.5 million over 2 years, for 2 years. He's been a disappointment, you'd have to say. You see the players are pulling for him. The kid's trying. You wonder at the 20-game mark, which was, you know, a couple games ago. That's when you start doing your assessments. I would have to say at some point, they're going to have to maybe make a tough decision on him because they can't afford to have him. He seems to be behind the play. He looks a little bit lost out there. And then he has a tendency, you know, over-trying, and that results in maybe a not-so-smart penalty. And he did that a couple games ago, and you saw the other night he took another one. So, you know, you feel for him. You want him to do well. But unfortunately, this is not a learning-on-the-job position right now. They need results. And again, as I said, with kids like Hosang, and also Steve's pushing below, you can't afford to go with him much longer, I would say.
We've been talking to Mike Wilson, the Ultimate Leafs fan. Mike, keep you and Rick Vibe, keep up your fantastic work on your podcast. I highly encourage our listeners, if you're Leaf and NHL passionate, Mike and Rick bring insights that I'm sure you will enjoy. Mike, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Mike Wilson, the Ultimate Leafs fan. November 28th, 1971, 50 years ago today. It is really hard to believe that 50 years come by. And Naz, as we've talked with friends and with Mike Wilson, whatever, for a lot of people, it still hurts. It was the greatest team that never won the Grey Cup. We're going to go to break. And coming back from that break, we'll talk to two of the most important players. They were all important players, but we get a significant opportunity. We chat with Peter Martin and Joe Theismann. We'll be right back.
It was a rainy day in Pizzaville when we realised that our extra-large pizza is 2 whole inches longer than the so-called extra-large from the big pizza conglomerates. How do they even call theirs extra large when Pizzaville gives you 18 whopping inches, steaming hot? Because, let's be honest, who wouldn't want 2 more inches?
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian. Authentically Italian.
Here's to every boy who thought his Bobby Orr rookie card sounded great in the spokes of his bicycle. Is only served to make yours in mint condition more valuable. And now it's payday. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise wants to buy your vintage collection of hockey, baseball, basketball, football, and soccer heroes. Now's the time to cash in while the hobby reaches new heights. If you got them, we need them. Mint Inc. Trading Cards and Sports Merchandise. Visit our store online at mintink.ca.
There's an old saying, entrepreneurship doesn't build character, it reveals character. Entrepreneurs learn to trust a person by trusting people. The law firm Rigabon Carly understands this. They know all about entrepreneurs because they work for them. Every day, they've earned their trust. They know that when it comes to meeting the legal and business needs of entrepreneurs, good enough is not enough. Rigabon Carly, the intelligent choice.
You won't remember that Real Space Media was once Real Tours Media. What you'll never forget is how they helped you, the real estate agent, sell homes. Or you, the business owner, show off your four walls. Real Space Media has made a name for itself, creating virtual tours and walkthrough floor plans using 3D technology that's light years ahead. In the age of COVID, what better way to see a space safely than through the digital lens of, what were they called again? RealSpaceMedia.ca. Got a space to showcase? Check out Real Space.
Last minute of play in the game.
Unlike sports, the outcome of palliative care isn't determined in the dying seconds. Physically, socially, and spiritually, palliative care is giving someone the best quality of life for however long life remains, while supporting their loved ones. All services are free of charge with partial government funding. The need for palliative care is great. Making an impact is the newly opened Hospice Vaughan Mario and Nick Cortolucci Hospice Palliative Care Center of Excellence. A truly amazing 10-bed residence, the first palliative care hub in Vaughan. If you share the belief that everyone deserves to live until they die, get involved. volunteer your time, or donate to hospicevaughn.com. We are for community, by community. And together, we are here to serve.
Opinions expressed on the Naz and Wally Sports Hour are those of Naz and Wally and their guests.
The only thing I love more than sports is sports radio. Take it away, boys. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. Today is November 28th, 1971. A day that will live in Toronto sports infamy. We are pleased to welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour two tremendous players, legends from that 1971 Argos team that will forever live in our hearts, Peter Martin and Joe Theismann. Peter and Joe, I'll turn to Peter first. Thank you so much for joining us. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, and I really love being on your show because you're the only guy that calls me a legend. You're the only guy who does that.
In my mind, you are, Peter, in a lot of
ways. Well, thank you.
You're not only you're a football legend, you're a broadcasting legend as well. You did so much work for the Toronto Argos as a broadcaster as well, and University of Western Ontario, and so many other accomplishments. So in mind, you're a legend.
Also, wow, thank you.
Also joining us today, football legend Joe the Throw Theismann. Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Good morning, Walter. Good morning, Peter.
Hey, Joe. How are you? Good to talk to you again. I haven't seen you for a couple of years. When you're up for the reunion.
I know. It's great. But I still follow the CFL very closely, in particular the Argonauts. And
yeah.
It's great to see that they have an opportunity to go back and do something we had a chance to do. I can't believe it's 50 years ago. I mean,
They have a chance. There's a chance it could be another Calgary-Toronto matchup, but I think Calgary got a tougher road to get into the Grey Cup than the Argos do. But could happen.
You get to this time of year, and you just don't know what weather's going to be like, where they're going to wind up playing. There's so many factors. Does somebody get nicked up in this game that changes the face of it? You know, fortunately for us, we've got the bye.
Yeah.
We have a chance to be able to sort of wait and see what happens with the other two.
You remember, talking about weather, that was a factor in 71. Looking out of my backyard, it's kind of it's a cloudy, dreary day here in Toronto. It's not raining, it's snowing. It's snowing. So you're right, weather it could be a factor in a couple of weeks here, and it certainly was in 71.
Fortunately for me, both championships I lost, they tore down both stadiums.
Yeah.
They tore down Empire Stadium in Vancouver, and they tore down the Big Sombrero down in Tampa. So I don't have to drive in those cities and see the visual reminders of what's happened in my life.
You know, the one thing that you have to remember, that was the first Grey Cup game played on artificial turf, right? And you remember, like, that old AstroTurf? That's what it was called, AstroTurf. Based on what they put in the Astrodome at Houston. And that stuff was so hard. And I tell you, when it got wet, it was slick, and it was not a good surface to play on.
No, I think, we were built for speed. They were built for mauling. Calgary was, and I think that I do think, obviously it was a heck of a football game. See the score and all, everything that happened in it. And Peter just played sensational, by the way, in that game. I think it's one of the best games he ever played.
I took some time last night, Joe. I rewatched the game on TSN up here. They've got on demand. You can go back and look at the Grey Cups and stuff. So I went back and I looked at the game, and it didn't take very long because there was no commercials. It was perfect. But it brought back a lot of memories. But the one thing that I never realized until last night was, boy, you were really under a lot of heat that night. I tell you what, they really put the blitz on you, and you were under a lot of pressure all night long.
Peter, if I can jump in here, guys. You guys are obviously broadcasters.
Oh, I'm sorry. Walter, we just took over your show.
I love it. Believe me, we get our job easy. Thanks for that. Every time we get broadcasters on the show, it makes my life easy. And I'm sure our listeners absolutely adore listening to the banter between you two guys. It's quite. I'm like a kid in a candy store this morning, listening to to you two guys and going down memory lane. Peter, I'm going to ask you a question, and then I'm going to turn over to Joe, and basically the more or less the same question. This comes from, interestingly enough, on September 28th is also an important day in Canadian sports history. It's we had Phil Esposito and Paul Henderson on our show at the same time a few years back on an anniversary, and I asked them both the same question. I got two startling different answers from Esposito and Henderson, and I'm going to ask you guys the same question. When you woke up this morning, when you're having your coffee or whatever, did the thought of that game 50 years ago pop into your mind this morning? Did you think about it this morning? How'd you think about it? And does it still hurt? Peter, I'll first to you and then to you, Joe.
It wasn't the first thing I thought about this morning, but, you know, we've talked earlier before this broadcast, and I looked at the game last night, and certainly, you know, looking forward to the talk this morning. You know, I agree. I'm having a hard time believing that it was 50 years ago. You know, and nobody likes to age, and I can't believe it's 50 years ago. It still does hurt. It still does hurt. And for one simple reason, you know, you don't get too many chances to be a champion. And when you get a chance, you got to grab it. And the disappointment was we had the chance and we didn't grab it. And I never got another chance. I never got another chance to play in another Grey Cup. And that's the biggest regret I have.
Joe?
Yeah. Well, for me, I wouldn't say it was the first thing, but the month of November hasn't been kind to me because 10 days ago was the 36th anniversary of my leg being broken. Yeah. The second time, the first time was up in Toronto in our opener against Montreal in 1972. And but Walter, you and I talked earlier this week, and since our conversation, all that keeps running through my mind are the guys. You know what we shared. I don't really think people can grasp the community of players and the feelings that we have towards one another and the moments that we shared. The locker room to me is a very sacred place. I played for Joe Gibbs for 6 years. I saw Joe Gibbs in my locker room 6 times in 6 years. The locker room belonged to the players. We controlled the tempo. We controlled the atmosphere. We controlled the whole thing. If somebody got out of line, we took care of it. You know, we'd celebrate together. We'd cry together. We'd do crazy stuff together. I mean, we weren't called the Mavericks for you know, we earned that moniker, okay? That's who we were, and we were very proud of it. I was reading some stuff about Gene Mack, and, you know, Gene was, I guess, the Cowboys' cowboy. You could say, but I've said this before. I can list more people, more guys from that Argonaut team that I played with 50 years ago than I can any roster that I played on, whether it's a Super Bowl, whether it's a Cotton Bowl. Yeah. But the Grey Cup to me is very, very, it's very close. And, you know, I think back, I constantly think back on that game of the what ifs. I call myself a windshield guy, not a rear mirror guy, but I still look at that football game and I still laugh about a little bit about Dick Thornton after he intercepts the ball, and yeah. You know, Dickie would say, and God bless him, he's moved on in life and to another. You know, he's not with us anymore. But you know, Dick said he felt like he was going to have he had the keys to the car because the MVP got a car, and he had those keys, and he's standing on the sidelines, and I hand the ball off to Leon. Leon slips and fumbles. I turn around, I look, and you know, Calgary's on top of it. Dick said those keys just sort of slipped out of my hands and hit the ground. And you can just picture this in slow motion, the disappointment. He said, I just should have gotten the end zone. I mean, there were so many shoulda, woulda, couldas in that game. And, you know, Peter was right. I mean, from the first snap to the last snap, it was a track meet for me. They were big. Holy mackerel. I mean, that was one big, fast football team. Yeah. And here we were, just you know, the quick little lightning football team that got neutralized a little bit by the weather.
Yeah. Yeah. Naz, I'd like to turn it over to you.
I saw that the weather conditions were not good that day. Have you ever played in any worse, Joe P?
Oh, yeah.
I did not so much. We had a bad game in Ottawa once in the mud in a playoff game against Russ Jackson, which we got hammered in that. That was brutal. The worst game I ever played in, though, was a Canadian senior championship game in 1964. We played in Winnipeg, and it was like minus 30 degrees or something like that. That was the worst. That was the worst ever.
Joe, I remember a game you played in Southern Cal.
I played two of them. I played one in Southern Cal in my senior year, the last regular season game my senior year at Notre Dame in 1970. The whole second half was just a torrential downpour. And then I played one in Tampa Bay, where it seemed like it would be sunny and then, you know, rain. And they have pictures of that game. They show the water cascading down the stairs. It looks like a waterfall.
Yeah.
But that field dried. The Coliseum in Southern Cal was just muck, mire. Interesting how life takes cycles and goes around. Joe Gibbs happened to be the offensive line coach of the University of Southern California football team in 1970 when we played him out there on the coast. I remember throwing the ball around in all that mud. I threw for over 500 yards in that game, and the entire second half was played in just a deluge as far as the rain goes. I mean, it just kept coming down. It wouldn't stop. It was unrelenting. I only weighed about 160 pounds. I weighed myself. I'll never forget coming off the field. I got on a scale, and the scale said 180. I had 20 pounds of water and wet. My uniform was just, of course, we didn't have the kind of uniforms these guys have today, right, Peter? I mean, ours were cloth. They'd sew up the holes in them for us. I had like three jerseys. You just had to make them last the season. I mean, you know, it was funny. It had patches all over them by the time we were finished.
Interestingly enough, I checked the weather report for Vancouver today before I went on air. Guess what? There's a rainfall warning in effect.
They have a dome now, though.
They have a dome now, but back in those days. And I'm up deep, and I don't, you know, I mean, football games get played out on the field. You guys, you sort of kicked Calgary's ass earlier on in the year. In my mind, you guys had the better team. You had more skill. You're faster, and there's no question the conditions affected the outcome of that game. But you know,
They played in it too. It was a struggle for both teams. But can I just go back to something Joe mentioned about breaking his leg in Washington and having the problem here in Toronto as well in 72? And I mentioned the disappointment of not grabbing the championship and you got a chance, and then what a horror show 72 was. You know, Joe, you broke your leg, and we had all kinds of other injuries, and we didn't make the playoffs. We went from Grey Cup contenders to missing the playoffs in 1 year, and that was my last year. But I was going through my scrapbooks the other day, all right, and there's a picture when you had your injury in Toronto. You remember Mel Mert Prophet, our trainer? All right.
Yeah.
What a wonderful man he was. And there was Mert. He's on one side. You got your arm around his shoulder. I'm on the other side. You got your arm around my shoulder. And there's Mert. And there's 777 as we're helping you off the field. And that's probably not a very fond memory for you. But I was, I took a long time looking at that picture.
Yeah. You know, we could turn this into a 3-hour interview because of the wonderful, you know, the people. Like I said, I think everything in life is about the people that you work with, the people that you live with, the people who are your friends. And for us, it was really funny. I mean, we were a close football team, but we weren't necessarily close when it came to socializing. Everybody was different. It was very eclectic in its nature. Guys from different places, guys lived in different places. The guys, you got to remember, back then, we all worked. We didn't practice till 5 o'clock at night because we all had to have jobs during the day. You know, I worked at City Pontiac Buick Cadillac for John Carmichael. I started the leasing division in that dealership, and I really didn't. I was part of it. Let me be honest, okay? Being truthful, you know, I sat in an office. I'd take my son Joey in there. We'd play a little while, and I'd try and learn how to get leasing, which I did. I eventually learned how to do all that stuff. But they were, you know, the Carmichaels were so nice to me and so kind to me. And And so just we all had different jobs, and then when we all got together to practice, it was like almost like a reunion. Hey, what were you up to? What were you doing? What'd you do last night? Where'd you go? And it was, again, socially in North America, life was changing completely. And yeah. So we were, you know, we were sort of the tip of the spear of a society that changed in so many different ways. And we were that little group that existed within it.
And well, you're right, Joe, about you talking about you having the job. Like I worked, I taught school for all 8 years. I taught school full time, had a full time teaching job. You know, we went to training camp in the summertime. I was able to work. You know, they even encouraged the players, you know, to get jobs, to stay here in the off season, even to work, you know, during the season. We practiced at 5 o'clock to accommodate that, and you know, so that was sort of the culture. They wanted you to sort of settle in, get involved in the community, and be part of the fabric of the city. That's all changed now because it's a full time job now to be a football player, right? I mean, 12 months of the year, right? You have to be a football player.
Yeah, well, you know, I watched a game last night too, and I saw Jim Stillwagon was in on almost every tackle of that game. What kind of a player was he?
Oh, unbelievable. Well, Peter, you know, he was on your side. He's an Outland Trophy winner. I mean, he was a great football player at Ohio State. I mean, we had all-stars everywhere. I get the biggest kick out of telling people I played with a Ph.D. in biochemistry, a Ph.D. in mathematics. Now, I played with guys that can't spell Ph.D., okay? But up in Toronto, I had the opportunity to play with guys who were exceptional, Mike Eben and Paul Desjardins. I mean, you know, Paul was my center and Mike was the wide receiver. But Jimmy was, you know, he and Corrigal were a pair. Oh, my gosh. Oh,
well, we had Jim Anderson. He was an All-American, right?
And on the field.
Dave Ramey was on that team. Marv Luster in the Hall of Fame. I mean, we were loaded. We were loaded. Danny Nikolic, Ellison Kelly, hey, the list. Yep. Bill Simons. The list goes on.
Oh yeah.
You guys,
of course, Mel. You know, I mean, not only were we characters in regard to the way we acted. I think the way we carried ourselves. You know, we were sort of the way the city of Toronto was. It was evolving. It was young. It was exciting. It was fun. I think that's who we were. And then, of course, you know, you had Gene Mack on one side. You got Mel Proffitt on the other with the long, flowing, golden looks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got intellects. You've got all the, I mean, I just love the way we were described. Louts, loners, partiers, and intellects.
Yeah. You know what?
That's who we were.
I saw a headline, Joe, that they described you guys as having large hair and large personalities, and there was an incredible amount of personality. And I think this is why this team. I mean, it was, you're right. It was an era where society was evolving, and it was the '60s, the early '70s, and everybody had long hair and mutton chops and bell bottoms and striped pants and
Gene Mack,
Dave Ramey, who you know how to put himself together, and just an incredible cast of characters, and that's why this team has remained in so many hearts of so many Canadian Toronto sports fans, football fans. It just, you can't forget, you know, you just can't. I'll make a confession. I wasn't in the mid '60s. I wasn't a Toronto Argo fan. Pete, you and I have had this discussion lots of times. I was an Ottawa Rough Rider fan. I was a Russ Jackson guy. I was a Ronnie Stewart guy. My two heroes, I was a flanker, played flanker in high school football. My hero was Whit Tucker. And another guy that you might remember, Joe, a receiver by the name of Tommy Greatwood. Those are two guys that looked up. But you guys,
Tommy was my wide.
He was your guy, and those were my two football heroes at the time. But then the 71 Argos, the overwhelming personalities on that team just captivated me. I couldn't root for you guys.
Walter, one person we haven't talked about was sort of the ringmaster. You know, I call myself the ringmaster of the circus. Was Leo?
I was just about to get to that.
Leo was the one that brought us all together.
Yeah,
you know, Leo was the one that, you know, I wound up, you know, playing for, and you know, he and I had our issues because he wanted to rotate quarterbacks my rookie year there. You know, Greg would play a series, I would play a series. Greg would say, what the heck is this?
The one thing that was different back then than now is the fact that this we played in 71. That was in that era was before free agency, right? We didn't have the movement, Joe, about trying to you go from one team to another within the league, right? If you played out your option, you took a pay cut. If you played out your option, nobody in the other in the league would sign you. So what that allowed was for it to develop a core of players that played together for a long period of time. Right. When you take a look at the, you know, that the 71 team was a process of building that team from the day that Leo got there and added pieces every year, added some different pieces. So we had a nucleus of veteran guys that the people knew who they were. Right. There was fan identity with the players, you know, and that's one of the issues I think that the CFL has got right now is player identity, because there's so much movement of players that they're not together long enough to be like we were.
Well, that you know, the other thing too is it's fan loyalty too, Peter. Because I mean, when I played in Washington, it was before free agency in the National Football League.
Yeah,
I mean, our offensive line called the Hogs. They played together. Most of the guys played together for almost 10 years.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
You really became entrenched in the community. I mean, it was one thing to play together and build a core as a team, but you also became a part of the community. You became a part of Toronto. I became a part of Washington. And you know, it's now people. It's like they have favorite players as opposed to favorite teams.
Or in
sync, they run together. But back then, you know, it was all about you played your rear end off. You didn't take guys make so much money today if they get a little bit of a tweak.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, ownership wants to sit them down because they're protecting their investment, and they don't have to play because they get paid. Not that there are guys that don't love the game. Trust me, I know a lot of players out there love the game, but there are guys that, you know, looking for a reason to sit down and collect a paycheck.
You talk about being part of the community. Joe, do you remember our barnstorming basketball team, right, that we had in the off season? We used to go around and play against the high school kids and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
I should mention this, too, that you and Greg sponsored a team when we founded the Mississauga Minor Football Team in 1971. You guys sponsored a team. Well, it was called the Flying Sevens, wasn't it, or something like that? But
It was the Flying Sevens.
So anyway, but I've got to tell you a quick story. Ed Harrington, the great Ed Harrington, right? Joe, you remember we're playing basketball in the off season at Port Credit Secondary School, where I worked. Ed Harrington took the ball out of bounds behind our basket, and we were trying a fast break, and he threw the ball the full length of the floor and put it in the hoop. Do you remember that?
Yes, I did.
He put it all. He threw it all the way down, and it went into the basket, right? And of course, the fans went nuts, and then the referee waved it off as no basket, right? Because you can't score from out of bounds.
I've never seen that before. It became an inspiration for me to try and do it every time. You know, I'm the guy that's supposed to have the arm, right?
Yeah.
So it became something I'd try all the time. Never could do it. Never could do it.
Yeah.
But I don't. You know, that's really the, you know, the things that we did. I mean, you just and I stayed in touch with so many guys, and now, you know, some of them have passed. And, you know, I saw Tony not too long ago. About the time when we had the reunion, I saw Tony Morrow up there. I had a chance to visit with him, and you know, I really think of our football team and the components that went into it, and how you build a winning scenario, how you build a winning organization. I wonder sometimes, did Leo have that kind of a vision, or did we all just sort of fall together? And he recruited.
Pete and Joe, as well. Sorry, I'm going to have to interrupt. We've only got a couple of minutes, unfortunately. And Joe, you are quite right. We could do this for 3 hours. There's no question about that. But there's one thing I before we move on. You guys managed to get together 10 years ago in TSN, and I highly encourage the listeners. It's on YouTube. It's TSN did the great story of called Mavericks, the 1971 Argos. You all got together at Pete's house. Pete, you, not the whole team, but a good group of guys. And I watched it last night, and I could see the glisten. I mean, you guys, you were showing the game, and you were transfixed watching that game. And when Dick Thornton intercepted that pass, it's like the camera man or a woman did a fantastic job of focusing the camera on you guys, and the camera was on your eyes, and you're watching Dick Thornton run that thing back. That was 40 years ago at the time. It was almost like you guys were looking and were hoping for a different result. Really quickly, yeah. Peter and then Joe.
I watched it last night. The score was the same.
But you guys, what came through in
and
that
Dickie
special.
Still didn't get, Walter, Dickie still didn't get in.
Yeah, he still didn't get in, but you guys were looking at it hoping that he would. But what I wanted, the point I wanted to get across really, really quickly, first Peter, then Joe, we only have a minute and a half. You guys were like, when you got together, it was almost like it was a reunion of brothers. You really enjoyed each other's company. You were thrilled to be with each other 40 years later, which was 10 years ago. Peter, I only have 20 seconds for you and 20 seconds for Joe, and then unfortunately we have to go.
Yeah, you know what? You can think about all you want. You know, we didn't win the game, but you know what? Life's been good. Life's been good. That's all you can think about.
Joe,
The memories will stay with me forever. It was my first professional experience, and you know the people of Toronto, they just embraced us. I mean, it was one of the greatest experiences I've ever had in my life. I look back on it every time. I watch the CFL every time I think of people like Peter and all the guys that I had a chance to be teammates with.
Joe, Peter, Joe, I checked the lineup last night. Joe, you were the first guy, number 7. Peter was the last guy, number 77. I think 777 in a casino is lucky. Naz and I have been the luckiest guys in the world getting to chat with you two guys. Unfortunately, we have to go.
Okay.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Thanks for the great memories.
Thanks.
You guys,
thanks, guys.
Will always be
take winning. Care, Joe. Take care, Joe.
Thank you, Pete. Peter, right take on. Care. Thanks for the stroll down memory lane. Take care. Bye-bye.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.